It's the Burt Cohen Show. Has had some bumps in it, that's for sure. A lot of blood has flowed. I guess that's what makes history. But sometimes there are legitimate wars that Congress declares, as is required by the Constitution. Other times there are some interesting military actions that have what's called plausible deniability. The president can say, I didn't know anything about it. Sometimes this happens. There's a long history of that. And November 1963, of course, is remembered as the month of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. But 20 days before he was killed, or maybe it's 21, I should say, about 3 weeks before he was killed, the president of Vietnam, Ngo Dinh Diem, was assassinated as well. And it's all very mysterious. It was quite bloody, of course. It wasn't just he who was killed. And the story has been unclear as to who is really responsible for it. Was it some rogue agents? Maybe the president himself knew. Well, we're going to look into that because it was 50 years ago. Seems hard to believe that Diem, the president of Southern Vietnam, then called South Vietnam, was killed. Our guest today is John Prados. John, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, John Prados is an author and analyst of national security based in Washington, D.C. He's the author of more than 20 books and many articles on topics of current importance, presidential studies, international security, and diplomatic intelligence or military history. His current book is The Family Jewels, the CIA, Secrecy, and Presidential Power. Newly appearing in paperback are Islands of Destiny, The Solomon's Campaign, and The Eclipse of the Rising Sun, and Vietnam, The History of an Unwinnable War, 1945 to 1975. And that's put out by the University of Kansas Press. He's winner of the Henry Adams Prize in American History. His current ebook is Rethinking National Security. Fascinating stuff. I got to read a bunch of them. Well, I wonder, John, again, thanks for being with us. Set the context, please. What was going on politically and militarily in South Vietnam in the fall of 1963? No American troops were on the ground yet. What was going on with President Diem? What kind of president was he? Did he have popular support? So set the context, please.
Okay. I should start by saying that it's not actually true there were no American troops in South Vietnam. We already had more than 16,000 troops. It's just that at the time, they were employed primarily in training and combat support activities and not actually serving as combat units. In any case,
thank you.
The political situation in South Vietnam was quite complex. Ngo Dinh Diem had been appointed as prime minister by a French-supported Vietnamese state, which he in the 1950s, mid to late 1950s, himself succeeded in overthrowing and replacing it with what was called the Republic of Vietnam, of which he became the leader. Diem had good public support at the beginning, but the corruption and some of the political maneuvering that took place in Saigon gradually withered his support. And in 1963, the situation was greatly complexified by Diem's subordinates, his family included, by the way, whom he had appointed to various positions of great power in South Vietnam. And Diem had favored Catholics over other religions in the Vietnamese context.
Uh-huh.
This became a major problem in the early summer of 1963 when one of Diem's brothers, who was in charge in the area around Hue, intervened to prevent Buddhists from celebrating their big anniversary. And this evolved into a Buddhist crisis, which by the high summer had become very intense and led to another of Diem's brothers, his cohort and colleague, Ngo Dinh Nu, spearheading a crackdown on the Buddhist religious hierarchy all over South Vietnam and in Saigon, in which Buddhist monasteries were attacked by Vietnamese security forces.
Hmm.
That Buddhist crisis became the context for what happened afterwards, the coup and all of the rest. Vietnamese, South Vietnamese military forces, the generals, were outraged is the wrong word, but they feared they were being implicated in the government's actions against the Buddhists. And the Buddhists, by the way, were a substantial majority among the population of South Vietnam, up as many as 90% if you include various associated political religious sects. So they found themselves being implicated in an action against the majority population and being left with the responsibility for something that the Nguyen family was doing. And that led them to consider overthrowing the Diem and his family.
Wow, fascinating. And, you know, in Vietnam, interesting. I was wondering what the percentage of population of Buddhists was as compared to Catholics. 90%, you say. And, of course, you know, those of us who, I mean, most people don't really follow history, especially from this far back nowadays. But Indochina was owned by the French. And they were a colonial power. And the French were Catholics, obviously, and the Buddhist majority was less than. They didn't have the same rights. They were controlled by the French, who, of course, you know, like any imperial colonialist power, wanted to exploit the population and, you know, whatever natural resources, rubber, whatever, the French controlled that. So there was the French, they started in the 19th century, I think, and so there was a lot of feeling against being controlled by the Catholic minority, who I'm guessing had more of the financial resources than the average Vietnamese Buddhist. Was there a significant class difference, Catholics versus the Buddhists?
I would say that there were representatives of all classes among both religious groups, but that Diem's policies consistently favored the Catholics during his time in power. So there was a higher proportion of Catholics in many different places. For example, if you looked at South Vietnamese generals, of the 18 or 20 or so top generals, four of them were declared Buddhists. Now, this is a little bit misleading because there was the question of so-called fictive Catholicism. That is, the favoritism that CM exhibited was such that a smart person might decide to pretend to be Catholic so that he would be part of the group that was being favored. And among the South Vietnamese generals, there were probably four or six of those top 20 that were so-called fictive Catholics.
And we remember, those of us who were around, the self-immolations of some Buddhist monks. I believe that came after this, or am I wrong? When was that happening?
If I remember this history correctly, I think that it did happen afterwards.
Uh-huh. But the people, Buddhists were angry that they were left out. Of course, it reminds me and listeners, I'm sure, of South Africa when there was apartheid, that a small minority ruled the country. And, you know, that it's tough to keep that up for a really long time and to keep the majority down. So those that were assassinated on November 1st, there was President Diem, and who else was assassinated?
President Diem and his brother Nguyen Nhu, the brother who had been in Hue, was arrested and put on trial, and he was executed, if I recall, in early 1964.
Yeah.
But the main assassinations were on November the 1st, and they were the president and his brother.
And John Kennedy, of course, was president at the time. He had almost 3 weeks left to live. Was the Kennedy administration okay with Diem? And what were their relations with Diem and Nhu? And did they have any specific problems with them? Was it open disagreement, or what was the situation?
I would say that there was a significant American disagreement with Diem. The Kennedy administration felt that the war against the Communist National Liberation Front could not be effectively prosecuted by the South Vietnamese government as it was then constituted.
Uh-huh.
And their disagreements with Diem were represented by approaches from the American Embassy in Saigon, increasingly heated ones, and by a succession of missions from Washington that were sent to South Vietnam to speak to Diem and Nhu. And American representatives on these missions came away increasingly frustrated because Nhu and Diem would hew to a hard line and refuse to make any kinds of concessions. In the midst of the Buddhist crisis, when the Vietnamese generals decided to act against Diem, they came to the Kennedy administration through the CIA and asked if the Americans would be supportive of a coup that they would mount against the Diem government.
Uh-huh. So it went, is it correct to say that Vietnam went from being the masters were the French, and now the people calling the shots, the people who from whom you had to ask permission, were no longer the French, but they were the Americans. So
I would say that's a disputed disputed territory in history.
Uh-huh.
I believe that the coup against Diem was very much a question of South Vietnamese. It was very much a question of the Vietnamese in control, with the Americans on the side. However, the South Vietnamese generals and their successors as well were in a situation where the United States was the primary supporter of their political and government apparatus, and absent that American support, South Vietnam was hardly a viable political entity.
Mm-hmm.
So that although the United States did not have any direct or formal control over the Vietnamese government, it was in a position to say to the Vietnamese that if the Vietnamese did this or that thing with which Washington disagreed, Washington might terminate various types of support. This was actually one of the tactics that Washington tried against Diem after the crackdown on the Buddhist monasteries, where the Americans withdrew their financial support for the South Vietnamese special forces troops that Nguyen Dinh Nhu had used to carry out the Buddhist monastery attacks.
Wow. We are talking about 50 years ago, history, November 1st, 1963, in Vietnam, the coup that killed the president of Vietnam, and his brother. Our guest today on the Bert Cohen Show is John Prados, author and analyst of National Security, based in Washington, D.C., who's done a tremendous amount of research and writing about Vietnam. And it's important to know what the real history is. There's certainly a lot of, there's always historical revisionists about any particular thing in history. And at some point we'll get to, could we have won the war? But right now we're talking about the assassination of President Diem. What actually happened on November 1st, 1963? I wonder if you could walk us through that. And did President Diem have any idea what was coming? He must have known something was up.
During the months that preceded this coup, the presidential apparatus was aware that South Vietnamese generals were plotting against them. They also held to the position that the United States and CIA were plotting against them. So there was constant talk in Saigon about political machinations and maneuvering and coup plots by various factions in South Vietnam. The Diem and Ngo Dinh Nu were certainly aware of these various the Saigon gossip. They were certainly aware of the Saigon gossip. And indeed, we have some accounts that maintain that Ngo Dinh Nu was planning a coup of his own, that is to say, a false coup, which he could use as a device in order to employ the military to suppress the other military factions that were favoring a coup. So this was one of the, this kind of back and forth maneuvering was one of the big features of what was going on. And the distribution of forces on the two sides was a thing that concerned the South Vietnamese generals as well as the Kennedy administration, who were constantly analyzing and reanalyzing the distribution of forces. In any case, as we move on toward late October, the South Vietnamese generals decide that they're going to go ahead with this coup, and they marshal their forces, and on the 1st of November, they activate their plan. In the middle of this plan, now, there is a new American ambassador in South Vietnam, Henry Cabot Lodge. And Lodge actually talks to President Diem the morning of the coup and offers him a safe passage to leave the country by himself and with his brother, but leaving behind the tools of power. Diem does not respond to this American overture. The coup forces carry out their arrangements. Ngo Dinh Nu's plans to activate forces on his own to counter the coup forces fails, and it begins to look like the Diems are going to be overthrown. Diem and Nu then flee the presidential palace and escape into Saigon's sister city, Cholon, where they are in hiding for a period of about 24 hours. Toward the end of this period now, they come back to Ambassador Lodge, and they ask if the offer of the free passage is still open. The Americans say that it is, and they tell the South Vietnamese generals where to pick them up. And one of the South Vietnamese generals who was worried about Diem's power, his residual power as a political figure, possible martyr, possibly staging a comeback, he made sure that Diem and Nu never made it to the airport. So they were killed on the second day, November the 2nd, when they were supposedly going to leave the country.
Were they in a vehicle at the time? I seem to remember that.
They were being carried in an armored personnel, an American, actually, armored personnel carrier, which we had given to the South Vietnamese as part of our military aid.
Wow. And so the actual killing was done by some South Vietnamese generals. Is that correct?
No, actually, the actual killing was done by an aide to General Zhuang Van Min.
Ah, General Min.
He was a middle-level officer, a major.
And Big Min, if it's the same guy I'm thinking of, became president down the line a bit when there was seemed to be a rotating presidency, just like a turnstile coming in and out, the presidents later on.
Well, actually, Big Min was the president of South Vietnam, but only for a few days at the very end of the war, just long enough to turn it over, or I shouldn't say turn it over, just long enough to witness the collapse of the Saigon government. In this early period, though, Min is the military strongman. In that sense, you're right, but he wasn't a president. He was the leader of the Revolutionary Military Council, which was the entity that took over from the VM government.
Wow, yeah, and then it continued from there. Now, one of the questions, and there's always, you know, questions in history and, you know, who did what and who knew what. What was the role of the United States, and what is the traditional story? Is there a traditional story which was kind of a cover story that's been out there all these years, and is there intentional misdirection in that traditional story, or is it largely accurate history?
I would say the accounts of the South Vietnamese coup of 1963 have been muddied by the question of who called the shots. That is, you know, there is this kind of impression, which you referred to, that in the United States was the colonial power, right? So the United States was controlling. And the issue of the degree to which Vietnamese themselves were carrying out this action has been hidden by this general impression. So, there is a history in which this coup was carried out, and part of carrying out this coup was the South Vietnamese going to the CIA and asking about whether America would support a coup. As a result of that, CIA officers became involved with these South Vietnamese generals who were carrying out the coup, and as a result of the involvement of the CIA officers, one way this story is often told is that the CIA carried out this coup against Diem. But to tell the story that way really hides the question of causality and agency. It was, in fact, the Vietnamese and the CIA was always in a supportive role.
That's interesting, because the CIA, certainly in the 50s and early 60s, was, you know, their hands were not clean. There was a situation down in Guatemala, and they did get directly involved sometimes. But that's interesting that there was sort of collusion there. So the South Vietnamese, see if I have this right, the South Vietnamese generals very much wanted Diem out because they feared that the Buddhist majority might rise up against them. So they had their, you know, CYA strategy as well. Is that an accurate reading?
Yes, I think that is an accurate reading. And you're quite right that the CIA, you know, carried out various coups throughout this period. And there is precisely the difference. There lies precisely the difference that in Guatemala, for example, CIA was giving orders to the Guatemalans who were carrying out their coup operation.
Right.
In South Vietnam, it was South Vietnamese issuing the orders, and the CIA, as you say, was in collusion with them.
Well, that must have been a challenging situation for the Kennedy administration, you know, how to handle this exactly. I mean, certainly a bit of a potential public relations problem. And John Prados, your research revealed that the National Security Assistant to the President, McGeorge Bundy, said, "The worst thing we can do is leave it, the Saigon political situation, that way." What did he mean by that? The worst thing we can do is leave it that way. That's before the coup, right? What did he mean by that?
That's exactly right. The South Vietnamese generals came to us originally in the high summer, in August, shortly after the raids against the Buddhist monasteries. And the Kennedy administration at that time conducted a formal sort of review, should they support a coup in Vietnam or not? And the question to Bundy and to Robert McNamara and Jack Kennedy and Dean Rusk, the Secretary of State, to all of them, the question was, well, if the United States throws in its lot with the generals, does what happens if we then change our minds and pull out and the generals fail? And so the delicate balance of forces in Saigon became an issue of primary concern to the U.S. decision makers, where they were trying to figure out who was on top, the generals or Diem, and who had more forces. And if the generals' forces were not sufficient to actually overthrow Diem, should the United States encourage the generals by telling them that we would support them? Eventually, what Kennedy decided, and this is in August, was that we would tell the generals that we supported their enterprise and we would help them when the time came, but that we didn't think that they should move right away. In the meantime, on the South Vietnamese side, the generals themselves decided they didn't have enough forces, so they were going to delay their coup enterprise. So before the Americans could even declare their kind of ambivalence about this, this is in August, the South Vietnamese had already decided to delay. Now, if you fast forward to the October period, just before the coup, when the South Vietnamese generals decided to go ahead, they had made the calculation that they now had superior forces and had neutralized those political elements that might support Diem. And the Americans at that point accepted their calculation, told the South Vietnamese generals that we would support them, and the events unrolled.
Ah, so it happened. I wonder how, as you mentioned earlier, there were about 16,000 American various different personnel on the ground, not certainly not yet combat roles. How do you think, were they at all aware of what was going on here? And I can imagine it might have mattered to them. I mean, here they are putting their lives on the line. And any sense of what the average soldier or contractor, I suppose it might be called, might feel about this? Were they completely left out? Were they in the dark about all of this?
I would say that at the high levels of the military assistance advisory group that was in Vietnam, that was the command for all these Americans, the senior officers were definitely aware. The senior military representatives to the South Vietnamese core zones were, being talked to about this coup project by the South Vietnamese generals whom they were working with. And the head of the military advisory group was directly asked by Kennedy for his evaluation of the possibilities of a coup and the distribution of forces, as well as whom he thought might be a good leader for South Vietnam if Diem were to fall. At a lower level, I'm certain that the American advisors were aware of sort of dissidents in the South Vietnamese army and differences between the pro-Diem and pro-military forces. And anyone who was stationed in Saigon should have been aware of the Saigon gossip about coups and plots and whatnot.
Mm.
But I don't think that they were aware of this situation in general or as a threat. Now, that's distinctly different at the top level of the American government. Kennedy and his advisors did worry about the safety of the American advisors in South Vietnam. And part of their planning when they were considering whether to support a coup in South Vietnam was around the question of the safety of the Americans. The Kennedy instructed the State Department to create an evacuation plan to get all Americans out of the country. The Department of Defense positioned a Marine Force offshore to intervene for American safety if necessary. And if you want to segue a little bit into the whole question of the Kennedy withdrawal, which is so controversial, the Americans actually said they were going to withdraw 1,000 troops in the fall of 1963 as part of supposedly this drawdown in Vietnam. Well, part of the motivation there was to simplify the problem of evacuating Americans, because if they withdrew a few, they would have less of a problem when the time came.
Well, it must have been. I can start to imagine the exceedingly strong nervousness that there must have been in John Kennedy's White House, because this was just shortly after the military debacle, the failed invasion of Cuba in the Bay of Pigs, and President Kennedy got a bit of a black eye for that and looked pretty bad. So here was another, you know, military CIA-related action, and the president must have been quite nervous about it. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit more perhaps about the worry in Washington that the GEM government could fall, and then there could be a government that would we have questionable legitimacy amongst the people in Vietnam, and that perhaps if the GEM government fell and a questionably legitimate government took over in South Vietnam, that perhaps South Vietnam itself could fall, the entity of South Vietnam, and then the communists could take over. Was that on the mind of the Kennedy White House? I can't imagine it wasn't.
Well, I would say the Kennedy White House was concerned about who might be a follow-on leader in South Vietnam, but that they did not question that the South Vietnamese political entity would continue. I don't think that they feared that South Vietnam would fall simply because the Diem government fell.
Or
if you look at the considerations in Washington and the various the various records of meetings and policy memos that flowed back and forth, I think what you would find is a record of concern about instrumental issues rather than a concern about the overarching implications of supporting a coup or of the war situation.
Because they thought that South Vietnam as a political entity would continue. Well, that's interesting. I wasn't sure about that. So,
well, look at it this way. I mean, if the Buddhists are 90% of the population,
right,
and the generals take a measure that is in favor of the Buddhists, then it's, you know, probably a safe calculation to bet that the political entity as a whole is not going to be undermined by this.
I see. I'm curious, were the Viet Minh, who became later derogatorily known as the Viet Cong, were they friendly with Buddhists? Were they more, was the Buddhist community, the Buddhist leaders, were they more comfortable with the Viet Minh forces, the nationalist forces?
On that, I would say that the Viet, the National Liberation Front,
right,
was always in the middle of a complex sort of a political calculation, and they were invariably balancing one consideration against another. Now, they were appealing to the general population of South Vietnam, so in principle, they had a very favorable view of the Buddhists. But they were also ranged against South Vietnamese political religious cliques who had religious doctrines that were drawn in part from Buddhism, And to the degree that they opposed these kinds of political religious sects, the National Liberation Front was also ranged against the Buddhists.
Uh-huh. If you just tuned into the Bert Cohen Show, our guest today is John Prados, national security researcher and author. We're talking about his writings about the 50 years ago coup against Ngo Dinh Diem in southern Vietnam. What was the political context here at home, the domestic situation in which President Kennedy made his decision on the coup against Diem? What was he facing? We talked about that a little bit. What do you think his political considerations may have been?
The American scene at that time was pretty much supportive of John Kennedy. You write that he had gotten a black eye over the Bay of Pigs invasion, but as far as Vietnam was concerned, most Americans hardly knew of the existence of Vietnam and didn't much care what the U.S. policy was. And what they did care about was Kennedy's general posture of anti-communism and pursuing the Cold War.
Yes.
And the actions being taken in South Vietnam could be represented as being in support of that. So that Kennedy pretty much had a free hand for what he did in the Diem coup.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So after on November 2nd, Diem was killed, as was his brother Ngo. What was the process by which his replacement was chosen? Was it just plain a military coup? And following that, how quickly did the United States recognize the new government as being a legitimate government? Was that really instant?
Yes, the recognition of the successor government was nearly instant. And the Vietnamese Military Revolutionary Council didn't really choose a successor. What it did was be the successor.
Yeah.
The gentleman who was the vice president of South Vietnam at the time of Diem was kept on as a fictive head of state, but the seat of power lay in the Revolutionary Military Council.
And so they became the legitimate government. Reminds me a little bit of what happened not too long ago in Egypt when we have a military council running the show. Well, how did the American public react to the coup, or did we not particularly pay any attention to it?
I would say that newspapers like the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Boston Globe, you know, they noted these events and reported on them. And Americans who were, had an interest in international relations, and particularly ones who were interested in Asia, they paid attention to this. But the political scene at that time, to the extent that there was to the extent there were interest groups that were specifically interested in South Vietnam, were ranged along the side of America supports. Therefore, when the Diem coup occurred, those political groups were in favor of continuing the American relationship with South Vietnam, and that aspect did not change.
Well, let me ask this. About the coup that killed those two top leaders in South Vietnam, what did the president know, and when did he know it?
Well, that's a very good question. When, Kennedy had a taping system
yes,
in his Oval Office,
sure did.
And he could choose what meetings to tape and turn on the taping system and tape them. In any case, the reason I mention this was because there exists a tape of John F. Kennedy's conversation with Henry Cabot Lodge before Lodge ever left for South Vietnam, and even before the South Vietnamese generals approached the CIA with this coup idea. And in this conversation with Lodge, Kennedy tells Lodge that one of his main tasks when he reaches Saigon to represent the United States is going to be how to deal with Ngo Dinh Diem in a way that gets rid of the problem of the new of the Ngo family, i.e. Ngo Dinh Nu and company, and if necessary, that he might have to be on the scene during an overthrow of Diem.
Hmm.
So I would say the answer to your question is that Kennedy was aware of this from before the beginning, and that in the subsequent things that happened, he ranged himself along the lines of making sure that if there were a coup, it would be effective. Very much along the lines of the quote that you mentioned from Mac Bundy's notes, that would be a representation of John F. Kennedy's point of view.
So he wanted some stability there, and it had to be to continue. So the president basically knew there was going to be a bloody coup before it happened. Is that correct?
Well, I would say the president knew there was going to be a coup. Whether he whether he knew it was going to be bloody or not, that's
right.
A different issue.
Right.
And the other point to make there is that Kennedy was out to ensure that there was a stable South Vietnamese government by whatever means necessary. So if Diem, for example, had in fact made the reforms that the Americans were appealing for and reined in his family and done all the other things that Washington wanted, I think Kennedy would have gone along with a continued Diem government. But by that time in 1963, in particular with the continuing Buddhist crisis, it became more and more clear to him that under the existing political leadership in Saigon, that situation of stability was not possible.
Interesting. So in retrospect, which is always a good way to look at history, and it's also a bad way to look at history, what did this say about the war at the time? Could we have known at the time, from the intelligence we had, and there was a lot of it because the CIA was very much involved in it, could we have known that the war in South Vietnam was unwinnable?
I argue in the book, Vietnam: The History of the Unwinnable War, that the United States had a continuing information gap, I call it. There was a continuing crevice between events and trends in Vietnam and what we knew or thought we knew. A lot of our people were focused on the wrong things. A lot of our people were reporting what they thought Washington wanted to hear. And Washington had an imperfect picture of what was happening in Vietnam. For example, right now there is the a more recent debate, historical debate in the United States, revolves around the question of the South Vietnamese Army was winning the war in 1963, and that is an argument that is based on an un-nuanced reading of the sources. If you look at the data on field activities, you know, the numbers of assassinations being carried out by the National Liberation Front, the numbers of attacks they were making, in particular the numbers of weapons that the South Vietnamese were capturing during their military operations, and the numbers of National Liberation Front cadres who chose to defect to the Saigon side, all of those statistics go down from the fall of 1962 into the summer and fall of 1963. Those statistics show a military situation that's evolving in favor of the National Liberation Front.
Hmm. But they didn't want to see that. I wonder how much of a factor in Kennedy and then Johnson's decision to ramp up the war, how much of a factor was the Cold War context, you know, the us versus them, the good guy Americans versus the bad guy Russians and Chinese somehow supposedly working together. And how did that Cold War context fit the reality on the ground in Vietnam, or did it fit?
My opinion is that the Vietnamese were engaged in a revolution, and that revolution was going to happen regardless of whether there was a Cold War or not. My opinion, though, and I say something about this in the book Vietnam: History of an Unwinnable War, but I don't think that's the majority opinion of American scholars. The American scholars situate Vietnam as part of the Cold War, and they often consider it as if it was just another battle in the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
one that the United States happened to have lost, but of course we won the Cold War, so it's all okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think differently. I think that the Vietnamese Revolution began as an independence movement against the French.
Absolutely.
And an effort to reunify the country under a Vietnamese leadership, and that the Cold War context was sort of artificially created during the French War in Vietnam, when the French, desperate to get American help, tried to reframe the colonial struggle as a Cold War battle, and were essentially successful in doing so. The American president at that time, Harry Truman, he drank the Kool-Aid.
Yes, he
did. Thought of the Indochina War as part of the Cold War,
yes.
And the Americans never questioned that original assumption. And it helped, of course, in all of that, that at the time we thought of communism as a monolithic political movement controlled from Moscow. So really, Moscow was calling the shots in every particular struggle across the globe.
Right.
So you can see in the decision documents and the records of these meetings that I mentioned, you know, like various officials speaking of the Cold War from time to time, and seeing Vietnam in that context.
Yeah.
So they were looking at Vietnam as a Cold War battle, but that's a separate issue, their perceptions, from the reality of what was the Vietnamese conflict.
Absolutely. And I believe that when Ho Chi Minh and the National Liberation Front, the Viet Minh, were successful in beating the French at Dien Bien Phu in 1954, wasn't there an American flag flown? And they had hoped that since America talked about being anti-colonialist, that they kind of expected the Americans to support their struggle for national liberation. And had we not somehow slapped the Cold War context onto the reality of Vietnam, things might have been quite a bit different. A lot of people would still have limbs that they have lost a long time ago and still have their lives and loved ones with them. Fascinating history. I know, you know, not everybody is interested in history, but it's important to be so, especially now that this is, you know, we like even-numbered anniversary. It's 50 years ago since this happened. There's a lot we can learn from the reality on the ground. So I wonder if, you know, just back to the Jim assassination, if he hadn't been assassinated, what do you think? And it's fair game to do that. What do you think might have happened? Or was it he was going to be assassinated by the generals?
I don't think it was a given that Diem would be assassinated by the generals. I do believe that Zhuang Van Minh's colleagues expected that Diem would, in fact, be taken to the airport and given this free passage out of the country. But the more important issue I think you raise is you know, what if there had not been a coup, right?
Right.
Or if Mo Din Nu had succeeded in carrying out his phony coup. And if there had not been CIA support for the South Vietnamese generals to carry out a coup, I think what you would have been looking at there would be a situation of continued political ferment in Saigon with an increasingly bitter rivalry between the Vietnamese military and the Diem regime. So you could very well have seen a civil war within the civil war,
wow,
so to speak.
Oh, my.
Right? Different factions of South Vietnamese fighting each other for control of the Saigon government while the Saigon government was supposed to be carrying out this war against the National Liberation Front. And in that situation, I think it still favors the National Liberation Front because the Saigon forces would be divided within themselves.
Wow. Fascinating, fascinating history. The new book is called The History of an Unwinnable... Is that the title? History of an Unwinnable War?
Vietnam, oh, yes. The History of an Unwinnable War.
History of an Unwinnable War, 1945 to 1975. Its author is our guest today, John Prados, University of Kansas Press. Looks real interesting, and I think it's great to know history. And one of the things I've learned throughout... the years, one thing we learn from history is that we never learn from history, but hopefully we can. John Prados, thanks so much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show today.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
All right. Rita Payne, Bring the Boys Home. And it all could have been avoided. 1971, that song was from Frida Payne, written by Holland Dozier and Holland. 1971, and this coup happened back in 1963.